Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Dark Side of the Podcast. Of course, we're recapping every single week the phenomenal series that airs Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on Vice, Dark Side of the Ring. With us today, the two creators of that show, Evan and Jason. Guys, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
Not too bad. A little exhausted. Where I spent all night cutting the Herb Abrams episode, and I'm starting to feel like Herb Abrams a little bit. But.
Dude, I just want to say really quickly that Jason's been editing this episode, you know, nonstop over the past like week, and his final 10 minutes, I'd say, of the episode might be some of your best work, sir. I couldn't believe it. Unbelievable.
Thank you.
Unbelievable.
Well, I've just been living it because like I've been in quarantine for the past 14 days because I came back to my hometown, Nova Scotia, to finish the editing of the show. And so I literally have just left my luggage by the door. I've been wearing the same clothes for multiple days, and I'm kind of feeling like the spirit of Herb Abrams is kind of taken over. And I think you'll know more about what I'm talking about when you see the episode, but it's just, yeah, it's having a haunting effect on me.
Yeah. I want to really challenge listeners who may not be familiar with that name. Don't Google it. Don't try to do your research right now. Just be surprised. If you don't know about this story, you're in for one hell of a ride. And I only know a little bit, but, the topic last night, I feel like I knew a lot about. It's Brawl for All. Of course, that's our topic this week. And I guess we should just start right at the beginning, Evan. Why was Brawl for All chosen as a topic? And what can you tell us about how this all sort of came together as being one of the featured episodes this year?
Yeah. So when we were working on season one, back in 2018, we were trying to, cause you know, we had just come off of the Bruiser Brody pilot, and we're still trying to figure out what this show is. And we were mapping out possible story ideas. And I think like what we wanted Dark Side of the Ring to be was like, we wanted it to be a mixture of like true crime stories, you know, like the Bruiser Brody story or the Gino Hernandez story. And we wanted it to have that side of the show. And then we also wanted to have more like, I don't know, I guess what you'd call like 30 for 30 type episodes where they would be more about, you know, wrestling behind the scenes and like the drama of, you know, putting shows together and more about like the sport itself, I guess. And you know, like the Montreal Screwjob was like one of those stories, you know. And so we were trying to look at other events or moments in wrestling that we could kind of chronicle like the drama behind the scenes and how it kind of, you know, mixes with the drama in the ring and out of the ring. And the Brawl for All was an idea that was pitched to us, actually, I think, at the time by I think it was Howard, who's on our team. I think it originated with Howard or Jeff or one of those guys. And it was Howard, right? Yeah. And Howard pitched the idea of doing it on the Brawl for All. And at first I was kind of like, man, I don't know. Like, could we get an hour of television out of like, you know, doing this, covering the story? And then like the more that we kind of looked into it, it sort of seemed like it definitely checked the box of like one of the main themes that we explore in the show, which we've talked about in this show before, which is that, you know, the like blurred lines aspect of, you know, reality meeting wrestling fiction. And because you have these guys that, you know, are now being told to fight for real and, you know, and how can you mix those two ideas on a wrestling show? How can you have a real shoot fight on a worked card, you know? And then, we just started to look into like Bart Gunn's story. And then we said, well, this actually could be an interesting vehicle to explore like the event, but also like the stories within the story, you know, like we could talk about the Godfather's story. We could talk about Draws's story. We could talk about Vince Russo and Jim Cornette. Because then we kind of found that the Brawl for All, like, it's also kind of a war of like wrestling ideology, like, you know, wrestling, like with like Vince Russo, here's someone who's trying to innovate, you know, and create new ideas and expand what wrestling could be, you know. And then you have Jim Cornette, who's trying to protect it and keep it pure and sacred. And so it's kind of another vehicle to get into that kind of conversation. So it seemed like there's just a lot to talk about that wasn't just necessarily the event itself of the Brawl for All, but lots of other things. So long story short, every episode that we do for the show, we have to map out like weeks in advance, and you know, we have to submit like 10 to 20 pages of like research and like at like written outlines to the network, because the network has to like, you know, green light it. So we put all the research together. We got all the characters on board. And then we submitted to the network. They greenlit it and we were out the door shooting. But it was something that, at, you know, while we were filming it in season one, and we can get to this too, is that Vice made the call to shorten our season one from 10 episodes originally to sit back down to 6. And so while we were filming this episode, we actually we had to shelve it. We had to, like, you know, we had filmed a couple interviews and we had to basically put this episode on pause. And that was, at the time, it was like, oh man, we just filmed these amazing interviews and there was a chance that this might never see the light of day. And so as soon as we got the green light for season two, it was like, we were so excited that we could go back and actually tell this story.
Jason, I feel like I should mention, you know, one of the major differences between the two types of episodes, you know, like maybe a Montreal Screwjob, and a Brawl for All compared to maybe Benoit or New Jack, is a lot of the episodes seem to feature a crime. And I'm not trying to be funny here, but I'm not trying to set up a joke. Do you think there was a crime involved in this story? And don't say, oh, it was a crime against humanity, or Bart Gunn was robbed. Do you think there was a crime involved in this, Jason?
I don't think there was a crime, but I think there was maybe just some like negligence in a little bit of a way. I think, you know, it's to put like athletes who are not experienced in real like shoot fights and, you know, throw them into shoot fights is like, I feel such a risky thing to do with your talent. It's like, I can't imagine like, well, maybe they may have done this like back in the 70s, but if I were to walk onto a movie set and then tell my actors like, no, I really want you guys to like fight for real. Like, you're going to really like, you know, do a real shoot fight. It's kind of a crazy thing to ask of your performers, but in this case, everyone signed up for it and we're down to do it. But I don't know if everyone really took in what could be the potential consequences of it.
Yeah. And like on top of that too, it's like, as you see in the episode with like, you know, Bart's story about how he got involved in the Brawl for All, it's like, there's that carrot that's being dangled. Like, because it's like these mid-card guys, these guys who, you know, are falling by the wayside a little bit, and they're kind of looking for that next idea that's going to incorporate them. And they kind of sign up for it thinking, well, you know, I am a tough guy, you know, like I've gotten into maybe a few bar fights. Obviously, there's some folks in the Brawl for All who are much more accomplished in actual combat, you know, like someone like Dan Severn, of course. But, you know, these guys basically are being told that this is a major opportunity for them, and then kind of getting involved in it. I think, you know, putting guys in harm's way, even if they do agree to it, you know, because a lot of those guys are probably going to participate in something like this to get that next career advancement that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And I think to kind of be putting in harm's way, which is, I think there is like a lot of naivete there, you know, in terms of what the rules were. The rules were really screwy. And then you just kind of see these guys, like, I don't know, especially once you get to WrestleMania 15 and you watch what happened to Bart Gunn, it's like the whole Butterbean scenario, which I'm sure we'll get into, like that too, just feels like it just has this like sad quality when you watch it. Like, it's like, here's this guy, he's being humiliated in front of a crowd of people. And it's like, I don't know, it's like watching the Elephant Man or something for me. Like, you know, like I just feel so bad, you know, for him in that instance, you know. Maybe that's hyperbolic, but I do.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, maybe haven't stepped back from the idea. I think so many hardcore wrestling fans just say, oh, it was a terrible idea and a lot of people got hurt. But they don't really think about something that Jim Cornette said to describe Vince McMahon that I don't think I've ever heard these combinations of words touch. He said, Vince McMahon is both a genius and a demon, which, you know, really feels like, man, when you really think about it like that, did these guys weren't just fighting for, you know, a $75,000 payday. They're fighting for their relevancy just based on their selection of being, you know, quote unquote mid-card guys, and the way the wrestling paranoia runs rampant with the performers inside of it, where everybody's worried about their spot, or as Jim Ross would say on our podcast every week, their push. And these guys probably felt pressure to say yes, and then maybe risk limb and life. And it didn't work out for most of them. So I do think that became more apparent in watching the episode for most casual wrestling fans than maybe it would have been without your episode. Do you think that's fair, Evan?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I think that is another aspect of it. Because, like, you know, a lot of people have asked us when we announced, like, the lineup of the episodes for season two, like, some people kind of thought, like, one of these isn't like the other. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the Brawl for All doing here? What's dark about the Brawl for All? People were saying, how'd you get an hour out of the Brawl for All? Which was my original thought about it, even. And I think the answer to that is that it is dark. You know, there is kind of this, because, you know, obviously wrestlers put themselves, they risk their bodies, you know, so much for this, like all the time, you know, and they do put themselves in harm's way with a lot of the stuff that they do, you know. But I think when you're adding an extra element of risk here, you know, in this situation, especially because you have guys that are really competing for their chance in the spotlight, and there's just like kind of this, you know, going into this situation, it just doesn't feel like it's well thought out. Like, I even remember when it aired on Raw back in 98 or whatever it was, or 99, and just feeling like so confused. Like, they didn't even explain it to the audience, like, what you're about to see is whatever, because they really couldn't, you know?
Right.
So it was so bizarre, and it was so, like, just, like, put together so haphazardly. And I feel like that also was what it was like, you know, behind the scenes too. And I think putting these guys in that situation and like getting involved in, I mean, that's why you see Dan Severn's like, nope. You know, he realizes that like, this is not, you know, like this whole thing could end in a fluke and my whole reputation as a decorated fighter could be out the door. Like, nope, I'm out of here, guys. Peace. You know, but at the same time, these guys are risking themselves and risking their bodies in a very extreme way, kind of all for the benefit of the ratings of this Monday Night War situation that's going on. And it does have an icky feeling. I think when you watch it and you watch the guys getting hurt and really not knowing how to fight each other and not knowing how to do this professionally, it has a very icky feeling to the whole thing. And I think that really came through when we were putting this together and looking at it and being like, whoa, this actually is like a little bit darker than we thought, where maybe we did think going into it that this was going to be a more quote unquote fun episode of the show.
Yeah. It is something that, is way different than what you would see on the rest of the show. I mean, let's not forget Brawl for All was happening around an episode that went head to head with Hulk Hogan losing to Goldberg on Nitro. And that same episode of Monday Night War would have, or the Monday Night Raw would have DX spoofing the Nation. So there's sort of all this silliness on the channel, but at the same time, you've got this realism, and I think they're looking for whatever sort of magic sauce they could just to upend what was happening on the other channel, which clearly had a lot of momentum with the NWO and now Goldberg beating Hulk Hogan. There's just, you know, you wonder, how do these bad ideas come from, or come to be? And I feel like two of the central characters that I would have liked to have heard from in this episode that obviously couldn't for obvious WWE reasons, probably Bruce and JBL, right?
Definitely. And you know, Bruce was definitely somebody we wanted to have in the episode when we were filming it in season one. And we actually were at Vince Russo's house, and we had just finished the interview with Vince Russo, and we were on our way to Bruce's house. We were flying from Denver to Houston, and right as we were pulling out of Vince Russo's driveway, I'll never forget, that's when we got the phone call from Vice, essentially, when it was like, guys, you know, and they basically told us to come home, you know, because, this episode is no longer going to happen. And, you guys are going from 10 episodes down to 6. Mm. And we were so crushed because everything we had just shot over that last week, we were like trying to come to terms with, that's never going to be seen. Like, so we just,
just busted our ass. Like, I remember we were so exhausted and we're like been lugging this gear around. And there's only been like two or three times, I think, during the course of making both season one and two, where we've been brought to moments where we're literally just like lying on the asphalt in the middle of a road, you know.
Yeah. I have a great picture of Jason. I have a great picture of Jason. Like once we got the news, that they were gonna, you know, they were gonna shorten our season down to six. There's a picture of Jason just laying in the middle of the street, like, you know, with like this moment. And that has happened to us a couple different times on making the show, where these laying in the street moments. But yeah, that was rough. But we were on our way to go interview Bruce, and it's like, man, had we just snuck it in there, you know, he may be in this episode.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, we still found a way to get him on there with some clips from Something to Wrestle. How important was Something to Wrestle to the original idea, do you think, even being discussed, Brawl for All, or did it play a factor?
Oh, definitely. You know, I think you guys around that time, like that was, you know, pretty early on, I think with your guy, relatively early on with you guys doing the podcast. And, you know, a lot of folks on our team, you know, listen to the show. Like I know Howard, I think listened to the show, Jeff listened to the show, who worked with us. And, I think just like that, probably they like the awareness of, you know, because the Brawl for All is kind of a forgotten idea in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that may have come through that by like listening to the episode, and of course, like not having Bruce in for the episode, it was like, well, we had a real challenge because it was like nobody else could really tell the story of how the brackets were made. Like we actually asked a lot of people and they're just like, I don't know how the fucking brackets were made, you know? And I do remember that from the Something to Wrestle story, was that he told that story of that, you know, the brackets were a shoot. And so I always thought that was interesting. And of course, as you see in the episode, Bart Gunn's like, nah, you know, or whatever. So that's kind of funny too.
That was funny. You know, one of the things that really stood out to me when I watched this with you guys this week was Dr. Death. You know, lots of rumor and innuendo in this about Dr. Death. How fired up was Jim Ross in real life about Dr. Death? It feels like for 20 years, he's been put in an unenviable position of always having to defend, you know, his friend just based on their friendship. And this feels like another example of that. Does it not?
Oh yeah. 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 JR during that interview was very defensive, about that the whole time. I think like, you know, that was the first time we really got to spend time with, you know, with Jim, was during that interview. That was the first time we worked with him. And I think his mood during the whole Brawl for All interview was just almost like a little bit of like, why the fuck are we doing this? You know, and also like, and also kind of just being irritated at the fact that, you know, a lot of people have for years and years and years thought that this was this whole ploy to get, you know, that everything was put in his favor. I mean, you know, and then watching last night's After Dark, which they did, you know, Bart Gunn talked about, like, you know, from Bart's point of view, anytime they promoted the Brawl for All, they featured Steve Williams and like they like showed his trainer and they talked about his acolytes and they talked about this. And so he felt it was very skewed, you know, towards him. But yeah, Jim was very passionate about it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's coming through loud and clear. Let's talk about Bart Gunn. I mean, he's the hero figure in a television show in 2020, thanks to you guys. And it feels like forever since we've heard from him. Tell us about Bart Gunn. You know, my two cents are, I felt like he was very honest and introspective. And I love that moment where he wouldn't commit to the word fizzle to describe his career after splitting up the Smoking Guns. And then eventually he just settles on that, seemingly before our eyes. I thought he was a very compelling character through this television series here. What was your experience working with Bart and how did you get him involved in the project, Jason?
At first I was a little like, I don't know why, a little nervous about interviewing Bart Gunn, because I think it was just hard to really find any like much info about him or other interviews he did to get a real sense of like what his personality was outside of the ring. And when we went to go, like when we went to go spend time with him, he was so cool. He was so down to earth. And was just, him and his wife were so welcoming to us. But there was a long period where we thought there was a chance that we weren't going to get Bart Gunn. And I don't know how we could have done the episode without him. Because I think there was a period where we were going to try to truck on without Bark Gun, but now I just I can't imagine it without him.
It was always the thing in the office. It was like the thing in the office for like a couple of weeks. Was like, you hear from Bart Gunn yet? No. And it was just like, oh man. It was like this real kind of thing where it's like, man, like, do we scrap this? Do we bail on this? Because it was like, I couldn't imagine the episode without him. There's no way you can do the episode without him. And it was really hard to get him to call us back. And it was one of the harder guys to wrangle. And I even remember, like, the main thing that we did to get him in the episode originally was I found his son on Instagram, and I just was like kind of reaching out to his son and was like, hey man, like, you know, this is who I am, and we really want to do this thing about your dad. And and then it just kind of was this confluence of things. But, like, you know, Bart was very skeptical about wanting to participate in this, because this was a very, like, difficult thing for him, you know, this whole experience. And I think he was very kind of worried about how he would be portrayed and how it would come together, and you know, and how it's been talked about before, I'm sure. And so it was a lengthy process of, like, talking to him and you know, earning his trust and really trying to say, hey, this is, like, your story that we really want to tell. And one of the funny things of how I think what actually sealed the deal for Bart getting in the show is his son is actually a actor in New York City, and his son was doing a part on the HBO series Ballers, and he was doing one or two scenes or whatever, and he actually was on set with Dwayne Johnson. And he just had, like, an opportunity to walk up to Dwayne and was basically like, hey, I'm actually Bart Gunn's son. And he was like, no way. And he was like blown away. And he was like, oh my God, how's your dad? How, like, you know, what's going on? And him and they just started talking about his dad. And then you know, Bart's son just brought up, he was like, yeah, so my dad's, like, thinking about, you know, maybe taking part in this. And I should mention just in the timeline that this was after season one had come out, you know, so the episode was already on the shelf. And Bart was still wondering if he should participate in this. And Dwayne basically told his son, he was like, you have to tell your dad to do this. Like, he has to be a part of this show. Like, and which was so cool to hear, you know, from Bart's son, that, you know, Dwayne obviously being a fan of the show and also, like, was basically, you have to convince your dad to do this. And so I think we owe, like, so much thanks already to Dwayne Johnson for being a fan of the show and sharing that with people. But also, like, you know, I don't know if Bart would have been part of the show had it not been for Dwayne.
Man, what a fun story. I can't imagine. Yeah. Let's talk about this, Jason. Do you think Bart is bitter that WWE didn't do more with him as a result? You know, it feels like he sort of settled into the fact that, you know, he had a good tag team career. But then when you hear him talk about, you know, oh, and then everybody was saying, oh, sure, you're going to knock him out. And it just felt like as the show went on and as he continued to sort of tell his story, he became a little more bitter. I mean, and I think most fans sort of side with Bart. I mean, the internet was blowing up last night discussing what a missed opportunity this was after Bart had sort of ran roughshod over this entire tournament. What could have been, you know, if they would have translated real life into fiction with the Bart Gunn character. Do you think it's fair to classify him as bitter, Jason?
I never really got the sense from him that he, like, was carrying, like, any sort of bitterness, like, about it. Like, there is, in a sense, that, like, I'm sure, like, he is, I think, disappointed in, like, how they didn't push him after he, like, won the Brawl for All, and the way that he was pitched that he was going to get pushed. But he didn't really carry it around him, like, when we were with him. Like, sometimes, like, when the camera's off with other people, they're with other subjects, they're still kind of, you know, riffing about the subject, and you can tell that it still lives with them and they're haunted by it. But with Bart, I don't know, he had a very kind of zen-like quality to him in a way, where I think he's now, like, he's moved on from it. Seems to be like really happy in his life. He's, I believe he's an electrician, and I think he mentioned he works over at NASA as an electrician at times. Yeah. And he's got his like grandchildren there, and he just seems, I don't know, he seems pretty comfortable and not very like bitter towards that in a lot of ways. But yeah, as you can see, like there was, like I feel there was definitely like a missed opportunity with him, because he was really cool. Like when you really like I can see like how like there was an ability, like there was an opportunity to do something with Bart. You just needed the right ideas.
Yeah. And I think from my vantage point, you know, I think the thing that he carried around more than his lack of push was the Butterbean thing. I think the Butterbean thing is a thing that does haunt him. I would say, where he feels like, you know, in hindsight, you know, had he prepared differently, had he not gone to a boxing trainer, had he not approached the match like a boxer and actually approached it more like a tough man contest, maybe he would have had a better chance. I don't know what the outcome, if that would have been any different, but that was kind of the thing that I think, you know, has ate away at him. And one thing that also was interesting about that interview is that he had told us that he had never seen the fight before. He had never watched the Butterbean fight before. Wow. Up until I think the day before that interview. And so that to me really just said that this was a really hard spot for him to go back to, because I think he did feel humiliated and he was very disappointed in himself. And that's something I think he's been carrying around. But one thing that did come to light last night, again on After Dark, that was interesting, is when he was sitting at home after he wins his tournament and he is brooding about his career, he wrote a letter to Vince McMahon, actually, like, which he didn't mention in our interview, I don't think, but he actually wrote a letter to Vince McMahon, like spelling out his frustration about, you know, I won this thing, now where's my push? And that's kind of ballsy, you know, for him to basically be like, you know, dude, I won this thing and now what are you going to do with me? But I guess that letter that he wrote to Vince went completely unanswered. So it's just, it's wild, you know, it's wild that, because it's almost like if they had something, not ever saying they should do a Brawl for All today, but like if someone had that like level of organic, you know, like was kind of over in like an organic way like that, I feel like that's something that WWE would jump all over today, you know, had they had like someone, I mean, maybe, I don't know, but.
Well, I don't know either, just because it feels like if it's not, you know, I think if anything, we've learned over the years that if Vince sees you through a certain lens or at a certain level, rather, that's where you are. And he's not really going to veer from that. And if there's someone in the back who campaigns really hard, we've heard that sometimes that works against you too. Like, Arn Anderson has talked about how he would champion Luke Harper a ton, to the point that it almost felt like they weren't going to do anything with Luke just because he was Arn's guy. And we've heard, you know, Bruce on Something to Wrestle talk about Heyman lobbying for guys so hard, you know, that sometimes it would just turn Vince off. Of course, the prime example that I think Bruce always mentions is CM Punk.
Right.
So it's just fascinating to me to sort of, hey, we don't have anything for these guys. And that's sort of the other thing. Creative has nothing for you. We don't have anything for these guys. Let them just beat the shit out of each other and maybe we'll make a star out of Dr. Death. But when that doesn't happen and they do beat the shit out of each other, the plan maybe originally was we'll put Dr. Death with Austin, even though everybody denies that, but seemingly that's why he was coming in one last run. And maybe it wouldn't have been a SummerSlam main event, but maybe a, you know, a December show or a February show. But Bart Gunn never even gets that, which I just think is fascinating. But one thing Butterbean got is all of Bart Gunn's ass at WrestleMania 15. He's an Alabama boy. Did you guys eat at his restaurant? What'd you think of spending the day with Butterbean?
We did spend the day at his restaurant, or a morning. But he had like a deal. It was like what, $9 like prime rib, like
steak? Something crazy,
or like a T-bone. I can't. It was good though. I'm not gonna lie. He told us he got the recipe from some like, what was it, like some, I don't know, some
I
chef.
Can't remember.
He like took the recipe and he had like this wicked marinated sauce that he made. That actually I thought it tasted great.
What a character he is, Jason. Tell us about spending some time with Butterbean?
It wasn't a lot of time. I think we spent maybe like an hour. We went to his restaurant early in the morning. We like set up there before they opened up, and we got it all set up, and we're just like waiting and waiting. And then his son walked in, and I was like, at first I was like, oh, it's Butterbean. And then it took me a second, like, no, whoa, that his son looks just like him. And then Butterbean came walking in the door behind him, and he just sat down, and he was so, I was surprised. And I guess I took it for granted that he's so media trained. He's done so many reality TV shows. And so it was just like any other gig for him. He like walked in, there was like a setup, like he sat in this chair, and you know, we talked to him for, I don't know, like 45 minutes to an hour. And he was just on point. He was really good, actually. He seemed cool. He was also just really chill vibes. He seemed like he was pretty happy.
But he also backed up the story that he was brought in as Bart's punishment, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating. It's weird how it seems like no matter what story we're trying to tell in professional wrestling, somehow it gets around to Vince McMahon again. Let's talk about one of the more interesting characters through the history of not just the series, but the industry. Evan, I feel like you had fun shooting with the Godfather. What can you share with us?
Godfather is amazing. We basically, again, like we were so fascinated with his career trajectory, like through time, like playing these different characters, Papa Shango, Kama, you know, Nation of Domination, Godfather, you know, he's played so many, inhabited so many different roles. And we thought that this could be an interesting vehicle to touch on that. But of course, you know, we're so limited by our runtime. But we get to Vegas, and this is during season one. We actually shot his interview during season one, and we like get to Vegas, and we have this camera guy that shot most of season one with us named Chris. And Chris is a family guy. You know, he's got children, he's married, you know, and usually every time we get to a town, you know, Chris kind of pieces out to his hotel room and like see you guys in the morning for the interview. And
family and stuff.
Yeah. He's like doing good family dad stuff. And we're always like the marks on the road. So we're like, we got to hang out with these guys the night before, you know? And so this one time we like get to like, we're in Vegas, you know? And I'm like, come on, Chris, you got to come out. You got to come out this one time. We're going to go hang with the Godfather. You know, this is a person you got to hang with if you're going to hang with any one of these guys. So, so we go to Cheetah's, you know, which is the strip club that, you know, the Godfather works at. Conrad, have you ever been there before?
No, I have not.
Okay. And it was like, you know, so we went there and, you know, the Godfather, this is like, I don't know, late at night. And like, he's got this, he doesn't work there anymore, unfortunately, but he had this window, like concrete building, like windowless concrete building that's behind the strip club. And he's the manager and that's where he works. And so we're like driving around the back of the strip club and we walk into his office and it's just like a cloud of weed smoke as we walk into this. It's like amazing. And then like he has like these two porcelain panthers like on either side of his desk. And he just was looking and he had like the Scarface, you know, like, you know, camera monitors where he can like watch like everything that's going on in the club. And it just like was like super tough, you know, it was like super tough looking. and we walk in there and Chris is with us, you know, who's really kind of, I would say, a little out of his element, you know, but still it was funny just to see him in this environment that we've brought him to. Cause we've brought a lot of crew members who don't know anything about wrestling into some pretty, you know, wild wrestling scenarios, I would say, right? Wouldn't you say that, Jason? Oh,
yeah, definitely.
People are going to want to interview them, I think, in like the RF video shoot interviews 10 years from now. Yeah. So, anyway, so we're there and I think there was a part of the Godfather. I mean, he just launched into telling us stories, you know, and he just was telling us these amazing stories about his pre-wrestling career.
He's such a good storyteller, and he was just, it was amazing. We just sat there and he just washed us with all these stories.
Yeah. And he was smoking these like volcano bags of like, what do you call that? Like vapor, like what is that? Like weed vapor? What is that?
Yeah. It's some sort of weed vaping volcano sort of.
Scenario. It was crazy. And I think there was part of him that was kind of sizing us up a little bit, which happens to us a lot on the road where like these wrestlers kind of see like, can they push these guys? Or like, you know, like who are these guys? So I think he was pushing us a little to like, you know, feel us out. So we just find ourselves like smoking these like volcano bags of like THC vapor. And then like, he's like pouring shots of like this, like sugary, like Jameson, American honey, like not my thing. Okay. Like not my thing. Yeah. And so we're just like taking a puff of the vapor and then we're like shooting this shot and we're just getting fucked up.
We're going off for hours. Like we're going blow for blow, shot for shot, like with the Godfather.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like hanging in there. Yeah. And he's like, and the Godfather's like going into these stories about his pre-wrestling career. And he's like, guys, I've done some bad shit. I've done some bad shit, you know, talking about like his biker gang days and shit. And it was amazing. And like one of the stories that like sticks out in my mind that like was just like, and we actually asked him about it in the interview when we interviewed him, but he told us a story about like, you know, he's a big guy too. When you see him in real life, he's a tall, big dude. And he was talking about like when he used to work at bars. And he was just like a monster. And like, he had like, you know, he was also a guy that had like, you know, he had a lot of tons of tattoos before a lot of people did and everything. And he was like bench pressing 600 pounds. And so anyway, he's working at this bar. And I remember him telling the story about this dude that came in that was bragging about the KKK. This dude came in and he was like talking to the Godfather about the KKK, and Godfather's like, you know, or Charles, you know, and he was like, what the hell is this fucking guy? You know? And this guy showed him that he had this knife that had like a KKK branding on it and some Grand Wizard stuff on it. And like, you know, Charles wasn't having any of this. So he just beat the shit out of this guy in the bar and then actually stole his knife. And Godfather used to wear that around his neck like all the time as like a trophy that like he had from this like KKK guy that he beat up in a bar, you know? And so like, he's just like telling us these wild stories while we're going blow for blow with him. And right in the middle of this, we look over at our camera guy, our poor camera guy that we brought into this like crazy situation, and like he's completely passed out, like in the chair. Like, do you remember that?
Yeah, and I remember Chris the next morning. He like came up to us and he was just like, "Guys, I'm so sorry. You know, like I thought this was the one time I was going to be able to like hang out with you guys and hang with the wrestlers and like be able to like stand up to it. And, but you know, it was totally cool. Chris is awesome.
Yeah. But he was so embarrassed like that. Like, you know, he literally was like curled up in a ball, like in the chair in Godfather's office, like, you know, with like weed smoke clouding around him. Like he, you know, and it was just one of the wilder kind of, you know, experiences that we had with any of these guys. And I just remember the next day we were all feeling it pretty bad. Like we were all like, oh my God. I mean, at least I was like, I don't know. And then we do the interview the next day with the Godfather, and he was amazing and he was on and he was incredible. And then like after, like, I remember Chris was like, I got to go to bed like immediately. Like he went to the hotel, and then we started back up again with the Godfather. And we just had this moment where we were like shooting with him, you know, more like handheld, like impromptu kind of style, while he's just like, again, like, you know, the Godfather just smokes weed around the clock. And then he just told us these like amazing stories, which one of which we actually snuck into the Road Warriors episode that you'll see later on this season. But yeah, it was just one of the more like awesome experiences we had, was just like hanging with the Godfather. Yeah.
Really a remarkable character, and somebody that we don't hear from a lot in their real life. Jason, did you ever think that you would, through the course of this project, have to shoot some B-roll featuring Pimp Slaps?
I figured at some point that would like happen in my career, but it was no better than to do it with the Godfather.
Oh my God. But
yeah. As soon as he told that story to us where he used to just like slap pimps from behind the bar, we knew instantly like, yep, we're doing that in the reenactments. There's going to be a slow motion shot of Godfather slapping some pimps off the bar.
Yeah. There's like this thing that we have where when we do interviews with these guys, there's like a look that Jason and I give each other when sure. we know this is going to be a reenactment later. Like, you know, like yeah. file that away. Like for sure. Pimp slap's going to happen.
Yeah. And with that take too in the reenactment, you see the guy like he's like spitting out a drink. Well, that's like something that like Evan and I have like practiced like doing like so much. Like before right before during the prep, I think of season one of Dark Side of the Ring, we got like really obsessed with like walking around and swinging chains around and shooting in slow motion. I think maybe partly Bruiser Brody was like inspiring that, but we were just like super into chains and we were just swinging chains and like filming it in slow motion. And so we would do these takes where we would like wrap the chain around our fists and like punch each other in the face. And then we would spit God. Out a bunch of water. So it was like a thing where like we've been so used to doing that when we try to get actors on set to do it, it's so difficult. Like I think that shot that you see took like, something like 20 takes.
Yeah, we need to sit down every actor and show them our chain videos. But yeah, literally, I think that had we not made these bizarre chain, like fetish, like weird chain fighting videos that we made, I don't think that Dark Side of the Ring may have been the same, right? I mean,
no. 2017, 2018, we were all about chains. We were just yeah. chains. My God. We had chains in our trunk. We were just on the road with chains. And but those videos, those slow motion videos we did on our phone, that really like informed like how like the approach and style to all the slow motion
100%
in Dark Side of the Ring.
I remember Vice was so mad, like after we started posting chain videos, I remember Vice came to me and was like, how come you didn't make chain videos for us? Like, how come you're not making chain videos for, why are you, you know? And like, they were mad like that I didn't like make chain videos for Vice. So I was like, okay.
Oh my God. Let's move on. let's talk about Draws. He's somebody that we fans don't see or hear from that much anymore. And I think that's a shame. What a tragic story he has. And it feels like we could have almost had like a miniature episode within an episode. I assume that's what you're going for in this piece right here, right, Evan?
Yeah. I mean, again, like going back to planning this episode, you know, and using the Brawl for All as kind of the spine of the episode and to kind of like branch off into different stories about, you know, different wrestlers, you know, talking about Draws was definitely, or talking about his story and what he's been through was always a plan. And, he was actually the very first interview we did of season two, when we were back up and shooting. And he, you know, yeah, just to know kind of what he's been through, because we got kind of like a glimpse into it of just like, you know, what he has to go through every day in order to, you know, just function. And it's, yeah, it was just a very like heavy experience, I remember. But he's a sweet, sweet guy, and his perspective on the whole thing and just, you know, is incredible. He has such an amazing attitude. Just even given everything that he's been through. And yeah, it was just kind of it was something that we obviously wanted to touch on. And then, you know, we were able to interview D'Lo Brown for, you know, the New Jack episode. And so we were able to ask him some questions about it and kind of work it in. And I think touching on that works really nicely because, you know, so much of the Brawl for All episode is about injuries and the consequences of the ring. And I think that, you know, knowing just like under a year later from the Brawl for All that this would ultimately end, you know, Draws' career, it just kind of puts it in perspective of like what risks these guys are assuming in the ring every day. And just like one move, like Jim Cornette says, like just one moment in time, you know, can change everything.
Jason, it feels like this is two seasons in a row where we have segments with like major tension between Cornette and Russo. Is Cornette just great TV, or do you guys just love that energy for an episode? Because man, he just jumps off the screen when he's talking about Vince Russo, does he not?
Well, yeah, he's very passionate about it. It's funny, like I remember we were filming one time, and after we were filming an interview with Cornette, his wife Stacy came in, and she was like, "Yeah, I was gonna come up and see if you guys needed any like food or drinks or anything." But then I heard Jim yelling Russo, and I just like walked away.
Yeah.
I think it's something that she's like used to, and she knows what kind of like mood that like Jim goes into when Russo's brought up. But yeah, it's like, yeah, the energy there is definitely palpable, and it you know, it's incredible to see on TV. But it's really interesting spending time with both these guys, because we really like, we love Jim and we love Russo as well. Like Russo was so cool also to spend time with. Like him and his wife were so nice to us and like so welcoming to us. I wish we got to spend more time with Russo. Yeah. So it's funny spending both times with them. They both have like really amazing dogs, and and then to see, yeah, there's this deep hatred. And I think it works well with the Brawl for All episode, because it is that battle of the ideology behind wrestling in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And it was kind of a trippy experience as a wrestling fan, knowing the background between those two guys. And, like I was mentioning, when we were at Vince Russo's house filming the interview, and we were supposed to go to Bruce's house after that, but when plans changed, we actually traveled from Russo's living room and got on a plane and went to Louisville, and then we're in Jim Cornette's house like the next day. It's just a weird thing to be like in their respective environments, like within 24 hours of each other. Cause we had to film the interview for the Fabulous Moolah episode with Jim. But one of the ideas that we had in the very beginning stages of the Brawl for All episode was like, you know, utilizing it, like I said, like as a vehicle to get into their rivalry, you know, to just kind of show like what Jason was saying, the war of like wrestling ideology. And one thing that actually happened is that we had that material, like we had filmed some of that material between their kind of rivalry. But when we thought that we weren't going to be able to use it for, when we thought that the Brawl for All episode was never going to happen, we actually decided we audibled and put some of it into the Montreal Screwjob episode of season one, because we sort of felt like, well, you know, the Montreal Screwjob story looks at a real life rivalry between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. These two guys are at odds with each other. And then when you kind of peel back the layers of the onion, you know, of this story, you see that there's two other guys behind the scenes that hate each other as well. And it kind of became this parallel for that. And we wound up using it in the Montreal Screwjob episode, but it really was, all that stuff was actually intended for the Brawl, just for the Brawl for All episode. And the other thing that we sketched out was this idea of like, can we like get them in the same room? Like, could we use this as an opportunity to finally get Vince Russo and Jim Cornette in the same room? And that obviously was a complete naive idea, because I remember actually sitting with Jim Cornette somewhere in his house, and I was like pitching him the idea, like in person. And I was like, you know, so look, like, you know, like, what do you think, you know? And I know he's talked about this a lot on his podcast, or he's talked about it a lot in interviews, and he gets, you know, he puts on the, you know, he does the Jim Cornette, cuts a promo on it after you hear that. But he just actually looked at me very lucid and was just like, I can't, like, I can't do it. Like, I've made a promise to my wife. Like, I can't, you know, because there's no telling like what will happen, you know? Like I will go into a blind rage and I will black out and I'll just wake up, you know, in handcuffs, you know, basically is what he said. So I was like, okay, never mind.
Yeah. But Russo had this really good idea, which I would love, like, if it could ever happen someday, I'm down to be there. Is Russo pitched the idea of that they both get on lie detector tests, and like, you know, we just film that experience. I would be like so down to do that.
Oh my God. For all the flack he gets for bad ideas, that was one of the best ideas we've heard that's anyone's ever pitched to us for Dark Side of the Ring, which is, you know, he was saying to us, like, you know, after the Montreal Screwjob episode aired, he's like, you guys should really hook every interview subject up to lie detectors. And I was like, man, that would be amazing. We should have done that.
Yeah. Somehow I don't think that's going to happen. Russo is a polarizing individual amongst hardcore wrestling fans, but people who've actually, you know, met him in real life sometimes tell a different story. Tell us about your experience in working with him, Evan.
Yeah, he was, it is interesting because when you see him like on his, podcast or his Twitch stream or whatever, he's just like over the top animated going into this bro, you know, thing. But actually, like when we spent time with him, he was really as chill as could be. And it was kind of like super nice guy. His wife is super nice. You know, like Jason was saying, you know, had an amazing dog. Like it was kind of like a little, like it was different, you know, like he just was.
I really like too that like he was just into just so many other things in pulp culture, you know. And so we spent a lot of time just talking to him about like other things other than wrestling.
Yeah, but he just was a really kind of down to earth guy almost. It was very like, cause you know, you hear kind of the reputation and you hear kind of how people think, you know, about him and all, and yeah, how polarizing he is and everything, of course, like you were saying, but yeah, it's kind of a different vibe when you're just like hanging with him, you know? And, yeah, it's strange.
One of the other things that, you know, really jumped out at me is the shot of Jim Cornette tearing the picture of Vince Russo. That's going to be a GIF that's going everywhere. Jason, whose idea was that shot?
I don't, was it Jim's idea?
I think maybe it was like, you know, I actually, I will post it now. I have a little, behind the scenes of making that shot. That I took on my phone when we were filming it. And it was just like, this is ridiculous. What are we doing?
Yeah, it's going to be a viral gift for sure. Jason, when you watch this episode back, what's your favorite or most memorable scene, do you think?
I think like there's moments that are like special to me because there's of like the behind the scenes kind of moments. Like for me, I really love when you see Bart Gunn pull out the golden gloves. Like when we were at his home, I remember like Evan and I on the way there, it was brought up like, do you think like he still has like the golden gloves? And we thought like, no, there's no way, you know. And we're there at the house, and like I think a couple hours in, like I just asked like, Do you don't happen to still have those golden gloves, like the gloves that he won for winning the Brawl for All tournament? And he's like, oh yeah, they're in the closet. And he just like pulled them out, and his like grandchildren were like playing with them. And it was just like, so they were in pristine like shape still. And it was like, wow, like here is this, like, for me, I think such an incredible like wrestling artifact that's just like sitting in this like closet, you know? and
how funny is it that he risked life and limb, and so many other people did. And I mean, so many careers were ruined, and it's for a giant pair of golden boxing gloves.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. That's what kind of makes it amazing. And the, it just puts the icing on the cake of this whole idea. It's just like,
those gloves are the dark side of the ring for sure.
Oh my God. Yeah. So silly.
One thing just to touch on with Bart too is in that interview as well, you know, when he's talking about pursuing Butterbean, you know, which like I was saying earlier was such a you know, I think that's the thing that he still holds on to a lot was like, you know, because he really tried to have that second opportunity, you know, to pursue him in mixed martial arts. I mean, Bart actually went on to have a career in Japan, not only just wrestling after WWE, but he also competed in MMA and had several MMA matches. And he was very successful, too. So he was really trying to get a rematch going with Butterbean for a while. And, you know, one of the more tragic sides of Bart Gunn's story, which, you know, is just one of my biggest regrets maybe on this whole episode. And it was mostly just because, like, I didn't really know at the time. And I wish I would have been a little more perceptive to ask him about it. But one thing I think is just another wild part of this whole story, and something that's part of Bart's story, is that we noticed when we walked into his home that he had this tattoo on his arm, of a child's face, like a portrait. And, you know, usually that means, you know, one thing. And during the interview, he, as you watch in the episode, when he's talking about pursuing Butterbean, he says that there were some, you know, like the match didn't quite come together because I wanted to prepare for it. And then he says, then some things happened in my life and then it just kind of, you know, faded away and it never materialized. And I wish if I could go back in a time machine, I wish I would have asked him in that moment, what were the things that happened in your life? And it's actually a very, very tragic story. But we found out more after the fact is that, you know, Bart's other son, you know, tragically was hanging out with his friend one day, and they were, I think his friend was like cleaning one of his guns and the gun went off and actually shot and killed Bart's son accidentally. And that was actually something that happened in his life and was one of the main reasons why he stopped with it all, you know, performing or competing or anything. And so that was just like, wow, just couldn't believe that like poor, you know, it's just a tragic, horrible story.
Evan, is there a deleted scene that didn't make air that you wish could have when you watched it back last night?
Oh my God. It's hard to think about those things. Cause when you after you make those choices of when you cut the episode down and you get it to time on television, sometimes when those scenes are cut out of the episode, they're just kind of gone forever and they come out of your mind. But unless, like, obviously, you know, the whole saga with the Jim Cornette and the Vince Russo thing, the thing that's so wild about it is that it escalated to a restraining order. And we did shoot a whole scene with, you know, Jim taking us through, you know, how he gets the restraining order from Vince Russo eventually. And then Jim turns that into something that he's now selling autographed on his web store and then donating the proceeds to charity. It's just like this absurd, you know, this thing is just, you know, ballooned into this absurd, you know, situation between those two guys. That might be one thing. I don't know, Jason, is there another thing that you wish that would have made it in?
I can't really think of any scenes in particular. It's been a little while, and I've had a lot of other edits of episodes on my mind since. But, you know, there's definitely, like, some things I wish we could have fit in. Like, there's, like, so much more, like, great Dr. Death archival out there that I wish we could fit into the episode in some way. We have, like, so much, like, running time. But we also, like... One thing we do on the road, and we try to find time for it. It's so hard to do.
Chain
videos is like we try to hunt down as much like archival as we can, and so we're always asking our subjects if they have any like photographs like laying around. And surprisingly enough, Bart Gunn like had a treasure trove. He pulled out this box, and it was filled. It was a treasure trove of photos, and like all these photos, like these candid photos. From the locker room during like that time period. And just going through that box was just incredible. And there's a lot of those photos that haven't made it into the episode. But I don't know, maybe someday later down the road, they could be used in some way. But we feel like it's our duty to like collect as much of this stuff as we can that, you know, just for archival purposes. And hopefully maybe some day down the road, it gets used for some purpose.
Yeah, he had an incredible collection of photos, and not every wrestler or subject we talk to actually winds up saving a lot of that stuff for whatever reason, but he definitely had some great stuff.
Yeah, it's fun to realize that most of those guys don't, you know, they think it's quote unquote mark shit and they're above it.
Yeah. So
they just delete it, and it's almost shameful if you're proud of your accomplishments. It's a weird subculture. Let's talk about the rest of the field here in Brawl for All. Is there anybody who declined to participate in this, Evan? You know, whether it was Dan Severn or Brockus or Mark Henry or no, I'm sorry, Mark Mark Mero or Henry Godwin, Bob Holly, PCO, Steve Blackman. Did anybody decline the opportunity to appear on the show?
No, you know, and again, it's just kind of like the virtue or the situation of our budget. You know, it's like we can only travel to so many places and we can only talk to so many people. Just on that level. And there's so many people you could talk to with this story.
I would have loved to have interviewed Carl Lett. Like
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, PCO is just like, you know, he's amazing, an incredible performer now, and what he's, you know, blossomed into, you know, since you look back at the Brawl for All, it's like hard to even recognize it's the same guy who's now just like, you know, a monster and going crazy, you know? So it would have been really cool to talk to him about it and then also like feature what the crazy stuff he's been doing in the last couple of years. It would have been great to also talk to some of the, you know, to talk to Dan Severn about just his perspective on it. I actually did get a chance to chat with him a little bit about it at StarCast, actually, when he was there in the green room in Vegas. I actually talked to him a little bit about it. And you know, just to be able to get his perspective coming from the world of UFC and looking at like, okay, you know, like why is this idea like a complete misfire and dangerous? And it would have been nice to get that perspective. And I'm trying to think, I know I talked to Ken Shamrock about it too. I think I saw him also at StarCast and talked to him about it. And obviously his whole perspective was kind of like, nope, you know, I'm not going to put anything on my reputation on the line for this, you know, which makes total sense. But yeah, there's just so many characters, or Mark Merrill, like you said, you know, coming from having a boxing background and like these other guys. And there's probably so many folks we could have talked to for this episode because it involves so many intersecting stories, but we just had to make some decisions at the end of the day. It was like, you know, who obviously with, you know, Bart and the Godfather, they kind of, you know, made it to the final four. Actually Draws did too, like Draws, you know, and they all kind of made it to that final position. So, you know, had we had been able to get JBL, it, you know, it sort of would have been, you know, having the final four as like the people that we would have been talking to. So that was kind of the thought process, but yeah, there's so many people we could have talked to, but no one declined to participate.
Man, I hope you guys can put a camera in front of Bob Holly sometime. That dude is a walking quote machine.
Oh, yeah.
Jason, when you watched the show last night, any regrets, any stones unturned for you, or are you pretty proud of the way Brawl for All came together?
I think I'm pretty proud of how it came together. Just considering that, like we were saying before, there was a time where we thought it was dead and that, like, this episode was going to be on the cutting room floor. And then to like resurrect it and, you know, see it on television last night, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I want to mention just two bits of feedback that we got on social media last night or just two things that popped up. One was New Jack's live tweeting of the Brawl for All episode, which I don't know if Conrad, you saw that.
Yeah, it's wild.
The funniest, I almost like, I was laughing so hard when I saw New Jack retweet the GIF of Mantar.
And this was like, so what the fuck is this? First time.
Yeah, it's like, what is this? And it was New Jack's first like reaction to Mantar. It was amazing. So that was incredible. And he was like, this guy be mooing or something is what he said or something. But also one thing I just want to highlight is a message I got last night is from I'm going to butcher his name, John Pierre Marini. I guess he must have worked for Vince at some point in time and within the last 10, 15 years. And he wrote in incredible job with both seasons. He's like, funny story. While on creative in either 2009 or 2010, Vince wanted to do another Brawl for All with the guys competing on NXT. In its original format, he had to be talked out of it. So
my gosh,
we might have seen a Brawl for All 2 on NXT.
Well, I'm glad we didn't, but I am glad that next week the Dark Side of the Ring continues. It's all about Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Jason, give us a tease. What are we in store for next week on Dark Side of the Ring Tuesday night at 10 Eastern?
This is a story that's kind of, I guess, you know, been in the background, in some cases haunted the wrestling world for, I guess, like over 30 years now. It's a story about Jimmy Superfly Snuka, who at the time in the early 80s was a massive draw for the WWE. And one night while on the road traveling to town, his girlfriend was found unconscious in her hotel room. And she later on passed away. And there's been a lot of controversy over the years as to like what happened on that night. And it's been a kind of a mystery and an unsolved case that has lived on all these years. And so we try to give a voice to everyone involved in it. And I think, I guess in a lot of ways, our the more true crime like episode in the season, would you say, Evan?
Yeah, I just will say that it's definitely one of the more complicated stories that we've ever tackled in terms of because it involves an incident that occurred in 1983. And then as you know, the case resurfaced 30 years later in 2013 via some new investigative reporting that was done. And which, you know, later went to trial. And even with kind of just us having an hour of television, again, it's another story that you easily could have broken out into 2 hours. It's a massive story and involves maybe the most interviews we have, I think, or we've done for one particular episode. And it's a very dizzying story in terms of, you know, trying to piece together what happened in 1983, based on a lot of different factors, and then looking at how it was re-examined and what it all means and legacy. And yeah, it's a very complicated story and one of the more challenging ones that we, put together. So going to be interesting to see what people think afterwards.
Well, we'll be here the day after to break it down. Hope you guys have enjoyed Dark Side of the Ring. If you'd like to, please follow the guys. Evan, do you want to go ahead and give you guys official social media accounts one more time here on the show?
Sure. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Evan Husney, my name. And you can also follow Jason at Jason Eisner on both Twitter and Instagram. And then you can follow the show, on Twitter at Dark Side of Ring or at Dark Side of the Ring on Instagram. And yeah, we're always posting stuff. We'll post some more behind the scenes stuff from Brawl for All and more photos and yeah. And tell us what you thought, tell us what you think of the show. And of course, next week's show, I'm sure, you know, there's going to be a lot of discussion following that.
Can't wait. Stay tuned. It's every Tuesday night at 10 PM Eastern on Vice, and, check your local listings, but it's on channel 271 for DirecTV. And I think it's also on the Vice app, and there may be some more of these coming out on YouTube. Have you heard any new updates on that, Jason? It's our number one request.
Oh, really? I haven't heard anything about any more episodes going to YouTube, but I would love if that happened.
Yeah, me too. maybe eventually, but I think, they're probably trying to drive people towards the app and towards places where there's more advertising. I don't know, but yeah, I haven't heard anything about YouTube.
Well, there you go, folks. It's our number one question, and there's the answer. We're not really sure, but one thing we are sure about is next Wednesday, we'll be here to talk about the Superfly Snuka episode. Don't miss it. Next Tuesday night, 10 PM Eastern on Vice, or check the Vice app, which I believe is available everywhere. Check it out in the App Store. We'll see you next week right here on Dark Side of the Podcast. I've been telling you for a long time that SaveWithConrad.com can save you money, but don't take my word for it.
What made you come to Save with Conrad in the first place?
I was looking to buy my mother's house, and I was dealing with some local, you know, banks and mortgage companies, and I was just shopping around, and I do listen to all of the podcasts, and I constantly hear it, so I figured, you know, let me see what these guys have to offer.
Now, working with Derek, what was your favorite part about working with him?
It was like he was around the corner. You know, if I needed something and I called him or I texted him or sent an email, I would get a response like I was dealing with someone across town, not, you know, from New Jersey to Alabama.
How much money were we able to save you?
You know, we definitely saved thousands of dollars, you know, going with, Conrad and Derek, you know, helping us out from what I was dealing with what I was hearing from other mortgage companies. They, you know, First Family was able to get us a better deal on the house.
Would you recommend us to a friend or a coworker?
Absolutely would recommend you guys in a heartbeat.
So what are you waiting for? Find out how much money you can save right now for free. You don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket. Even credit scores in the 500s can be approved. And if we can't save you money, we won't waste your time. But because we're licensed in more than 40 states, we can help more families than ever before. Find out how much money you can save right now for free. at SaveWithConrad.com. Oh, and did I mention you could skip your next two house payments? Hurry to SaveWithConrad.com.
NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lenders. Woo!
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.